The idea behind the Energy Transition Lab, as you said, is that there's a lot of ways in which our energy system is in transition right now. The University of Minnesota really has, as at its core of its mission, trying to support the public good. And so the idea is that we will work collaboratively, leaders in government and business and nonprofits and the community more broadly, to really try to move forward energy transition. Part of what we're doing is looking at the local scale, looking at energy transition in cities, in not only the Twin Cities region, but around Minnesota and also working with other cities around the country. We're also thinking at a state level about what this means, and then thinking nationally and internationally about these issues.
I'd like to turn now to a list you prepared of top 10 key areas of energy transition, sort of as it's described here, sort of a David Letterman top 10 list. Number 5, stop wasting energy. And there are opportunities to improve that if we can overcome laws that hamper innovation.
There are a variety of different kinds of laws that can serve as barriers, and then there are ways in which law isn't a barrier. So part of why a focus on energy waste is so important is this is one of these areas where there can be real win-wins between the economy and the environment, right? Because when we waste energy, it's not only bad environmentally, but it wastes money. There are all sorts of opportunities for cities and businesses to be more energy efficient and improve their bottom line at the same time. A lot of cities around the state are doing all sorts of, you know, innovative things to try to improve energy efficiency, and not just in buildings, but more broadly. So, for example, you know, if cities change the way they do lighting and light bulbs in their traffic lights, that can increase efficiency as well. So it can mean all sorts of different kinds of things.
4 on your list was create 21st century utility models.
This connects into sort of a broader question, right? Which is, when you look at how utilities have traditionally done business around the country, including in Minnesota, right, the old model of how we do energy and the role of utilities in doing energy is you have some big power plant, right, some big source of energy that is piped around to everyone, right, through the transmission lines, essentially. You know, so it's transmitted all over the grid. One of the models that the energy system has been moving towards is more decentralized energy, right? So instead of moving energy from big power plants, having more dispersed sources of energy, you know, and also, you know, ways of bringing more renewable energy online, that really changes sort of our traditional model of how utilities produce and distribute energy. Now, that's happening at the same time as technology around the grid is changing, right? So, you know, if you think about the electricity grid, there are places around the country where, you know, our grid is more than 50 years old. And, you know, we'd never tolerate a 50-year-old computer at our workplace. I mean, can you imagine? But so as we have to upgrade our aging transmission grid and electricity grid, there are all sorts of questions about how you on the one hand, take advantage of technology that allows us to understand how energy is moving around, because as you computerize the grid, there's a lot of information that can help you do it better. But at the same time, addressing cybersecurity, making sure that people's privacy is protected. So converting our utility model is about all those different things that are transitioning. It's also about the transition we're making in sources.
Just to pick on, let's say, the little individual solar panel that somebody has on their home or a city has at City Hall or something like that, and being able to input that product into the grid somehow.
Right, exactly.
That didn't used to be possible, as I understand it, and now it is.
Exactly.
Why is that? Have we made utility companies do that, or did they choose to do that?
It's a combination of the two. I mean, so there are ways in which our laws have changed over time to try to encourage more decentralized generation. One of the ways in which that's happened, for example, is, you know, one of the problems once you make energy is how do you get it to people? And so one of the things that's happened legally over the years has been a forcing of companies to allow open access to their transmission line, that energy can move from place to place. But yeah, it's partly a regulatory issue. It's partly a technological issue, right? Which is, in order to have somebody's solar count, there has to be something that can count it.
Back up to number two now, talking about bringing renewable energy to scale. We've talked about solar and maybe a little less. We haven't really talked about wind, but those are the two that pop into my mind as the most readily available renewable energy source. How do you make those more affordable or more competitive?
One of the most hopeful things I've heard in many years on energy transition is mid-continent system operator. For people unfamiliar with it, it's sort of the entity that basically moves all the it regulates the movement of electricity around our regional grid. You know, it literally is sitting there and working with utilities on how things move around and and who's putting what onto the grid. If you're old enough to be like me and like that 1982 Matthew Broderick movie War Games, it looks a lot like that, sort of big screens where you see electricity moving around. You know, when I was talking to the system operator at MISO, he said to me, we get as much wind on the grid as possible because it's the cheapest form of energy that we have. One of the things that's really exciting for Minnesota in particular is we have huge wind capacity in this state, you know, and a growing wind energy as well as a growing solar industry. And it actually is a really cheap and affordable form of energy, which then, you know, makes energy cheaper for everyone as it's able to be brought on the grid more.
To bring it really down to the local level here, have you ever heard of the Cook County Local Energy Project? It's a good example, I think, of acting locally, as you describe in one of your list items here. They've organized a nonprofit and are going to the local governments and trying to get focus on energy conservation. And so that might be a good example of what a small town can do to meet some of the goals that you've set here.
Absolutely. In fact, a lot of my work over the last several years has been looking at small towns, because small towns are often places where a few committed individuals can make a massive difference in helping with energy transition. We would love to explore opportunities to partner with people in your community. So, you know, to the extent that there's an interest in developing projects with us there. We really welcome opportunities to collaborate on energy transition. And you know, our goal is to become a sort of a go-to place for people who are, you know, working on these sort of hard problems of how do we constructively move things forward and would like some research help or some convening help, et cetera. Even though we have a lot of incredibly challenging problems, and we've talked about a few of them today, I think that there are real opportunities to make a difference. And I think there are opportunities for all of us individually to make a difference in our communities on moving this forward, and that are all taking these actions, and these actions happening at multiple levels can really make a big difference in our future.
I think everybody is aware of this issue, and thank you so much for educating us a little more on what it is you do and what you think about the future.
This feature was funded in part by the Coastal Zone Management Act of 1972, as amended by NOAA's Office of Ocean and Coastal Resource Management, in conjunction with Minnesota's Lake Superior Coastal Program. The statements, findings, conclusions, and recommendations are those of the producer and do not necessarily reflect the views of NOAA's Office of Ocean and Coastal Resource Management, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, or Minnesota's Lake Superior Coastal Program.